Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating, Culture Map's weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. I have Justin Yu from Theodore Rex and Thoroughfare Hospitality coming up in a little bit. But first, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She's a veteran of the Houston hospitality scene and the brand ambassador for a craft service company, Linda Salinas. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, Chef Roberto Crissini has partnered with Paco Calza to open Davanti Ristorante Italiano on Wesleyan Street, right down the street from Central Market. Chef Roberto is best known for Fresco Cafe Italiano, the Greenway Plaza area restaurant where he drew the attention of Guy Fieri on a widely watched episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Linda, let me just throw it to you. Did you ever visit Chef Roberto at Fresco Cafe Italiano?
Yes, I did, actually. It's always really interesting whenever we see someone that has gotten some attention, but a bigger question is, why did they close? I think that the food was really good, but it was strip center, fluorescent lighting, no real ambiance. What's going to be the biggest difference in the newest place? You know, it sounds like you've got a hospitality professional coming in to either to partner up. I mean, I always have a lot of questions about, like, Why didn't it work out? Because I just think that food, you can't just have really great food. You know, I think we're in the hospitality industry. So I like to know a little bit more about, you know, what's the next move?
Yeah, no, I mean, I never heard an official explanation for why Fresco Cafe closed. But I do think that you're right that, you know, Francisco Paco Calza, but known universally as Paco, worked at Cafe Annie for a long time, and he has been the general manager of BCN from the time that it opened, and he will remain in that role even when Davanti opens. So, you know, this is someone who, you want to talk about hospitality and service and making people feel welcome, is like one of the best in the city at it. Yeah. And so I think there will be a front of house presence standards that maybe didn't exist at Fresco. And I know they're also going to sell beer and wine. Fresco was very strictly BYOB, which made it beloved among our friends who are wine lovers, because they could bring whatever favorite bottle they wanted and have really incredible pasta at Fresco. But as you said, no ambiance at all, right? Like, you know, it really fit that kind of, not divey in the sense of being dirty, but divey in the sense of being kind of underrated when it was featured on the TV show.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just, why waste money on plates and tables if you're not going to have someone run the front? So I don't know. I'm excited to see what they have, you know, in store for them.
Yeah. And this opens next week. So I know you're always chiding me about, don't talk to me until it's ready to open. Well, this is going to open. This opens July 6th. So in a week, we'll get to check this place out and start chomping down on Chef Roberto's pasta. And, you know, sort of to the point, what the work that he did at Fresco was very delicious and very well thought of. And so, you know, I'm glad that he's back. I'm glad, you know, he took a little sabbatical. He went home to Italy to kind of rest and recharge. And, you know, whatever the circumstances were with Fresco closing, I'm glad that he's back in Houston. Topic number two, Dallas-based restaurant Rise Soufflé is coming back to the Houston area with a new location in the Woodlands. You may remember that Rise was at Boulevard Place above Ninfa's for about 4 years from 2016 until very early 2020. Not a pandemic-related closure, but just a didn't do enough business kind of closure. Linda, I know you know you participated in the opening of that Ninfa's. Did you ever make your way upstairs to Rise to have a souffle or two?
No, I think it was just there was never anyone there, and so you know, like walking into an empty restaurant that had been empty for a while was just kind of, I don't know. I mean, there's a king of souffles in Houston, Texas, and it's Tony's in my book. So, you know,
well, that is certainly for a dessert souffle, chocolate, Grand Marnier, whatever. Yes. Tony's definitely the king, but Rise has savory souffles. You know, they did a corn one. They did, I don't know. Different flavors of savory souffles. And I actually enjoyed it. I mean, I love a souffle. It's like such a fun, this is the weird exception to my not being an egg eater. Apparently if you souffle it, I'm okay with it.
You just don't like the yolks. That's the problem.
I think that's right.
Yeah. You don't like yolk.
Right. No yolk in a souffle.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm not going to say, would you drive to the Woodlands to go to Rise? Because if you wouldn't, you know, walk up an escalator, then you're certainly not going to drive to the Woodlands. But do you think the Woodlands will be a better fit for what they do?
Yes, right. 100%. I think that, you know, the Woodlands definitely needs more restaurants. You know, for a while there, they were kind of stripped of a lot of openings. Well, you know, when Houston got a lot of them. So we're starting to see couple of good restaurant tours diving into that, because I think it's an untapped market. It also makes more sense because there's so many families, festivities, you know, places to go. I think jamming another restaurant that doesn't have a place in Houston, definitely I think the Woodlands is a perfect fit for them.
No, I think that's right. And I just have this vision of like mom's day out lunches, you know, stay at home mom types, drop the kids off at school or daycare or whatever, and then, you know, go out for a nice lunch. That'll keep them busy during the day. And then at night, it doesn't really strike me as a business center spot, but certainly, you know, date nights and then all sorts of occasions, bridal showers, bachelorettes, all that, you know, it definitely does have kind of a you know, a female kind of demographic, right? Like, anybody can eat a souffle. I'm a man. I'm saying that souffles are delicious and people should eat them. But it does have that kind of, you know, it has a cheese card. It has a nice wine list. It's decorated in French antiques. You know, all of that just makes it sort of very female friendly from my perspective. And I think that it'll do very well, you know, because it'll be kind of a nice, it'll be a little nicer than some of the other restaurants in the Woodlands. It'll sort of appeal to that demographic. And so I think it's a good choice for them.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. And then topic number three, Bad Astronaut Brewing Company is coming this fall to Hardy Yards, opened by Carbach veterans Chris Fall and Craig Rocky Keener. It will start off with four styles, an American IPA, a hazy IPA, a Munich Helles, and a German Pilsner. Linda, I have to say, like, I have trouble sort of keeping track of the comings and goings of breweries, but even I have noticed that there's been some turbulence recently. You know, Local Group Brewing, which is right near Bad Astronaut, just got sold. Brash Brewing has new owners. The guys from Equal Parts bought it. City Acre, a little brew pub, kind of up 59 outside the loop, has a new owner. So let me just kind of throw it to you. I mean, you're kind of an old school craft beer drinker. What do you make of all these changes in the craft beer scene? And what does a brewery have to do to kind of break through these days?
I mean, I really think that there's been a lot of shift in the past couple of years in the the brewery clientele. People are stepping away from drinking gluten. I think, you know, whenever someone's like, hey, let's have a party or meet up at a brewery, all I can think of is there's screaming children everywhere. which, I mean, I'm not a breeder. It's just not my game. Even, you know, even when I open up restaurants, you know, I haven't done it in a while, a couple of years actually, but, you know, when you open up a restaurant nowadays, it's like the amount of beer you're ever going to sell to the off-premise or to the on-premise, aka bars and restaurants, there's literally only about 2 to max maybe 8% of all total sales. So what's the clientele? What's the clientele that's going to a brewery going to do? Like how much are you going to actually sell? People are just pulling a little bit more towards, you know, spirits. I think it's interesting. You know, like I was at a brewery just a couple of days ago on actually Sunday. I went to Carbach. I didn't want to drink a beer. I had a seltzer, and I was pretty happy with that. But I only
I think that is one thing, is that there's been this huge shift in the market where there was that hot minute where everybody was drinking craft beer and the breweries developed enough different styles. Like, oh, if you like something lighter, we've got a Berliner Weisser or a Pilsner or whatever. And if you want something heavier, obviously the million IPAs and stouts and all that stuff. But all of a sudden everybody's drinking seltzers, and it's just kind of I think it's cut into interest in craft beer.
Well, and I mean, and that's the thing. It's like when you're going out to drink, when you're going out to eat, it's no longer just about what you're eating and drinking. It's how the space is rolled out. Do you have bar games? Do you do drag brunches? Do you have a badass kitchen like Buffalo Bayou with like Arash? St. Arnold's has a giant yard and really good pizza, or, you know, whatever it is. It's like, it's no longer just okay to be a big warehouse with a couple of games. So, you know, I'd like to see what else they have going on. I mean, I even went, you know, honestly, like I really enjoyed the cidercade.
Yeah.
Tons of games, crushing cider. So I don't know. I mean, I think we've all come back from this pandemic wanting to be more thoughtful in the time that we spend in places. We'll see what these boys have going on.
Yeah. And I will say they have plans to have some games. They're going to have some arcade stuff. I mean, they want to keep people entertained. And I think that's right. I think, you know, we had Brock Wagner and Aaron Inkrod from St. Arnold on a couple of months ago. And Brock talked about the idea that these smaller breweries basically are like neighborhood bars that sell beer, but only the beer produced by that brewery. So, you know, if people like the beer, great. And if they can just sort of, you know, if there's enough sort of activities to amuse people, then they'll do okay.
Yeah.
All right, Linda, I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurant of the week. Stick around. Linda, for our restaurant of the week, I want to talk to you about Amrina. This is a new fine dining Indian-inspired restaurant in the Woodlands. Let me just throw it to you. I mean, we drove up there. We had this, I'm going to say we had a really good dinner. But I'm going to let you talk about kind of what were some of the things that you liked about our experience at Amrina?
Well, I was really surprised. First off, you know, I'm a big fine dining nerd. And when someone says they're fine dining, I'm like, I'm almost always giant eye roll when someone tells me, oh, we're going to do fine dining. It's like, fool, you don't even know what fine dining is. Okay. But I was surprised that it hit almost all great fine dining marks. The staff was very well trained. They knew every ingredient, every dish, how it was prepared. the staff, the service in general was not stuffy and it wasn't forced. Nice open body service, like just everything was really good. And the food was so beautiful. So I was really blown away at the little details. You know, I go to a lot of places across the state, a lot of restaurants, a lot of bars, a lot of resorts. And I mean, sometimes just getting lighting, getting a greeting correct, those things are a big deal. And you know what? And we weren't the only people that looked like we were having getting all of this attention. It was across the board. Everybody was getting that style of service and attention, which is admirable. I think you and I talked a little bit about, you know, is it going to make it out there because it is the Woodlands? You know, I know that we've seen a couple of places, you know, kind of like teeter totter in popularity out there. But I think, you know, I really think there's a place for them. I mean, it was funny to me because we were sitting down, we had an early dinner and there was a lot of people were dressed really casual, but it didn't matter. You know, they were getting the same style of service. I know that, you know, in fine dining, classically, you have to have like a jacket and so on and so forth. So they're kind of relaxing those marks. But I don't know. I mean, I really enjoyed it. What did you think?
I agree with sort of all of that. I mean, you know, as you said, we had an early dinner and we walked in and, you know, there's, you know, people in shorts, people in t-shirts, kind of whatever, very casual. But I think, you know, first of all, it's summer in Texas, so it's freaking hot outside. I don't have a problem with people being comfortable, even in a nice restaurant, but it's a very elegant room and all the little, you know, there's a tree, like there's a couple of trees that have been brought in to cover a couple of the tables. There's, you know, all this kind of decorative elements. I thought, you know, it was a Kona Grill back in the day. So it definitely doesn't look anything like Kona Grill, you know, and I'm kind of looking at, you know, my pictures from dinner. And I just think about, we had that little amuse bouche, that little kind of Pani Puri style semolina puff. You know, we had the chaat, which was basically, you know, kale and potatoes with a sauce, tuna tartare, charred octopus, a jackfruit samosa. You know, I had a pulled like a lamb, you had scallops, and then they sent us a piece of Chilean sea bass, you know, plus all the breads, plus everything else. I mean, it was an impressive meal, you know, with a lot of attention to detail. And like you said, a lot of like artful presentations and tableside touches and, you know, and sometimes that stuff can be silly. And I mean, one of them is a naan and they spray 10-year-old scotch on the naan, like when they serve it to you at the table.
Giant eye roll.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't need scotch flavored, you know, it had like a bourbon sugar and then the scotch spritz. Like I don't need whiskey naan, you know, but the butter chicken stuffed kulcha I thought was really delicious. And the roti that came with the lamb was fantastic and all this stuff. So I think there's a lot of attention to detail. I think there's high aspirations. You know, Jossie Bindra is the chef. He comes from a restaurant in Washington, D.C. that was very well thought of. And then he trained at some really top hotels in India. That's kind of the system there. Like when you're talented, you work in nice hotels. And then there's Giorgio Ferraro, who, you know, I've known from when he was at Smith and Wolensky a million years ago, and he's bounced around a little bit, but, you know, we're drinking, like I'm drinking Nebbiolo with my lamb, and it's served at cellar temperature, and it's just like great vintage, and it wasn't crazy money. I mean, most of the by the glass stuff is between 15 and 20 bucks, which is appropriate. And so I think it's an impressive place.
Yeah. I mean, I kept telling you, I was like, I think it's the best restaurant in the Woodlands. I mean, I've been to Tris. I know that you love Tris. I know that they are very, it's a great restaurant out there, but I think it definitely gives Tris a little bit of run for their money. I mean, it's a different experience altogether. And look, lighting, glassware, service, man, appropriate temperature for food and beverage, goes a long freaking way, I'm in. And then I'm really excited. They do a street food tasting that they only sit, they only have at the, like, basically, you know, quote unquote, tapas bar. And so it's a 6-course street food tasting that you could only have at this little, you know, bar top. So I told one of our other co-hosts, bro, when are we going? You know, I'm going to LA this week, but told him, I was like, we got to go and check it out. And that's fun. That's fun to me. I wish, kind of wish we had one down here. I honestly, I think it's like if Musafir and Kieran's had a baby.
Yeah, I think that's right. Cause it's not super classic Indian food. I mean, like there's not, or at least not in the same way that what you would expect it, right? There's no, you know, lamb vindaloo. There's no tikka masala. You know, he's kind of taking some of those flavors and then doing his version of it. But then again, like when have you ever had scallops in an Indian restaurant or Chilean sea bass? You know, he's doing a ribeye that we didn't try, but you know, they're doing a Peking style whole duck for the table.
Oh yeah, we saw that walk out.
We saw that go past, and it's like, okay, we gotta bring more people because two of us, that was not gonna work. But
yeah,
you know, I like what Chef Jossi is doing. I'm really intrigued by it. As you said, I have a special relationship with Tris and Austin Simmons. And so for me, that's still the best restaurant in the Woodlands because I know how much technique Austin brings to every dish. I know how much respect he has for ingredients. But I also get like not just VIP treatment, but like ridiculously over the top experiences every time I go to Tris. So, but is this a destination worthy restaurant? Like do people who love restaurants like Kieran's or Musafir, like should they be going to the Woodlands to try Amarina?
Yeah,
I would say yes. And yeah, if you're 100%. In the Woodlands and you're looking for an alternative, you know, because I mean, you know, there's a really popular Trulux in the Woodlands. It's like, I would much rather people go to Amarina for a special occasion than go to Trulux. Right. Like, so, And so I do think there's an opportunity for them and I'd be happy to get back.
Awesome.
All right, Linda, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks so much.
And I will be right back with Justin Yu. I am joined this week by the chef owner of Theodore Rex Restaurant. He is also a partner in Thoroughfare Hospitality, which is the group behind Squabble, Better Luck Tomorrow, and The Fancy, coming soon to Galveston. Justin Yu, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Thanks for doing this. I'm excited that you're here. We could cover a lot of different ground, but you know, it occurred to me that it's been 10 years that you opened Oxheart, the restaurant where you won a James Beard Award. And
then promptly closed.
Well, you stuck around for like, you know, I mean, I used to joke when I was going on vacation, like, don't bother me unless Oxheart closes. And now I had to figure out a new joke for that, like a new
brand. Got it.
But let me just flash back, you know, 10 years ago. You know, what do you kind of remember from that time? Because it's not that you burst onto the scene out of nowhere, because you had done the Just August pop-ups, you had done the Money Cat brunches, but I don't really think anything sort of prepared people for how different Oxheart was than anything that was in Houston at the time. And then by the fall, I think that was Allison Cook's first top 100, and you were the number one restaurant in Houston.
Yeah, that was crazy. I didn't even agree with her, to be real honest with you. We were definitely finding our footing at Oxheart. I remember it as a very crazy time, very tiring time, but definitely with staff and a group of people that I would have never wanted to do with anybody else. Honestly, a main character in that staff was Karen Mann, who was my wife at the time. And I just remember just being so tired all the time and trying our very best to keep everything together. It's crazy to me that 10 years later, we're in the same space with an amazing team that's, you know, I've gone to open on a couple other places, and we're doing as well as we have. I think that it hasn't been any easier, but you know, I think that doing it on your own terms has been, on my own terms, has been maybe the most rewarding part of the entire thing. You know, for us, it just, you know, I still to this day haven't paid for a sense of PR and cooking the food that we want to cook, doing it the way that we wanted to do it, training the staff, with a lot of people that still work with us day to day, and I'm happy and excited to still call friends, and to have the success that we did for this extended period of time, I think it's just kind of a, you know, we're lucky. We're really, really lucky to just constantly be able to be considered at some points in the top echelon of Houston dining.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just luck, right? I mean, there's a lot of skill and thought and perseverance, frankly, that kind of goes into all that. I mean, maybe kind of shift into kind of the current state of T-Rex and what it's like working with Caitlin Steets. You know, I mean, nominally it's your restaurant, but she's kind of as the head chef, like she's there every day. So what's the balance like between it being your restaurant and her kitchen?
Yeah, she's the chef. She's the executive chef. And that was a big move for me. I think it was something that I'd known for years that, you know, she was the head chef even before we named her the head chef. She was CDC for 2 years. And honestly, just somebody that we trusted each other with trying to do the right thing. So with Caitlin, for Theodore Rex, just very specifically, I would say that the restaurant could not exist without her. But then also, probably the restaurant could not exist without me too. And that's just the only one that's like that. And I think only because that is a very personal project, it has my nephew's name on it. And I think that she takes with that both the history behind it and runs with it. And I think that we, any dish that's on the menu, the same thing on the menu, if it weren't for her. But we talk about it very deeply on certain levels about, you know, it's just kind of like one of those things where, like, you work with somebody for so long, she finishes my sentences in the way that we cook. And honestly, she has a lot more to say too. So I hope in the future she has the opportunity to start her own sentences and not necessarily have to be there to clean up my messes. So what do I do there? I don't know. I'm currently there for the last 6 weeks, 6 or 8 weeks. I'm there 2 to 3 nights a week, just depending on what the staffing needs are. We're working pretty fast and furious on the fancy at Hotel Lucene in Galveston. And then there's a lot of day-to-day stuff that needs to happen. I'm lucky to be able to have Michael O'Connor be the chef at Battle of Tomorrow, but I was pretty much the chef at Battle of Tomorrow for a year and a half after as COVID was happening and navigating our way through that, or is still happening. And I would just say, like, the one that, you know, I really just call myself a partner, and I really wish that Mark would get more you know, credit for the immense amount of quality work that he does, but I don't have any say in the food over at Squabble. I get to be one of those people that just gets to go and enjoy it. And Mark, you know, was our first, you know, any sort of management position over at Opsart. And so it was always very obvious that he was honestly a better cook than I am. Probably is still a better chef. I consider him to be the best chef in Houston. My day-to-day there goes just, you know, I'm coming to the meeting. We go through what is needed for the restaurant. We kind of see, you know, projects what our day-to-day operations look like over there. And, you know, I get to do the fun thing over there where I just chat with Mark about food as opposed to, you know, doing anything else in those terms. So.
Well, good. Yeah. Let me ask you about Better Luck Tomorrow, because Michael O'Connor's been in place for a few months now, came to you from Vic and Anthony's. I mean, what has that been like, kind of stepping back from day to day and ceding some control to him and working with him? Because had you ever worked together before? I know your careers kind of maybe don't overlap exactly, but you sort of concentric circles.
No, we hadn't worked together before. But we've known each other for about the better part of, 13, 14 years, maybe 15 years. I don't really see it as ceding control. Honestly, I'm there most, at least three or four times a week. I'm at every single property at least twice a week. Some of them more often than others, depending on what they need. The one thing that I will say regarding, I was really sad about it probably about a year ago. I was like, man, I'm not chef anymore. You know, it's like, but I think that being the chef of one singular property would be a step backwards for growth of the company. And I think honestly, like my personal life. And I think that, seeing people grow into their own has been maybe the most rewarding part. And this coming from a guy who, was hoping to win James Beard Awards and be on lists and things like that. That's been the most rewarding part, to see people their own kitchen, to work on food of their own, to be a part of that creative process and to help people kind of, reach their dreams.
Yeah, I think that seems like a good kind of moment to start talking about Thoroughfare, the company you started with Bobby Hugel. I mean, how did you kind of evolve from, we're friends, we've been investors in each other's businesses, we're going to do a bar in the Heights, right? The Dry Creek space was too good to pass up. How did you kind of up from that into, now you've got a second restaurant and a third on the way?
I've been a big fan of Bobby's for a really long time. I was a cook at a restaurant called 17 downtown, and I lived right outside of downtown. And so I would jump on Memorial, and then I would quietly exit the Taylor Street and then go see Bobby at the end of my shifts. So he calls me like kind of his first regular. I actually didn't really drink before I really met Bobby. So I would say I would say that he is the reason why I drink in many different ways. And we were just friends at the time. And I think that, we were original investors, my dad and I and Karen and Anvil. And we just saw the quality there. We saw like the excitement there. And I think, especially back in those times, I really think that Anvil started it all for us. It was before predating the 2012 kind of restaurant boom. And it was just like, hey, these are people just doing things that are maybe a little bit out of the ordinary, things that are not just to sell, doing things that they really care about. And I think a lot of people saw that and were like, hey, I have a huge story to tell, like including me. I was like, I have a story that I wanted to tell. I had an idea and a vision that I wanted to present. And being able to see a place like Anvil be so well received in Houston, whereas everybody would always tell us, I don't know, like a tasting menu restaurant, like, I don't have any choices, like,
Right. Vegetables, so like you're not going to put a steak on the menu. Like,
I was just a huge fan of Bobby's to start. And honestly, Kevin, and the way that they're running their company at the time. After he had left Underbelly, and I was kind of looking to, grow my role as a chef to be a little bit more of an overseer as opposed to just, being chained to the stove all the time. I worked, so I would say, pretty tirelessly those previous 4 to 5 years. And I wanted a better quality of life, as a chef and to learn more about the business, to learn more about myself. And the reason that Bobby and I kind of got together and started chatting about it is like, I was very frustrated with the way that the industry kind of spit out people. Kind of chewed them up and spit them out. And I remember we were sitting at La Guadalupana talking about possibly working together. We'd looked at a couple, we were the people that were like commiserated with each other about problems with the things that we were doing, like staffing issues and just like friends, a little bit of just like, hey, let's have a cocktail and let's just chat. And we kind of learned that we had the same goals. And that goal for us, a big time was one, quality through the products that we're using, but then also like leaving the restaurant food and beverage industry in a better place than we found it. And I think that always is a goal for us and has been a goal for us. And he takes a much more macro view of it. I'm more of like, I like the little things. But he, it's been, you know, for as outspoken as he is, and for as many people that don't like his outspokenness, and in many ways that I am too, like, we work really, really well together. I think that he fills in a lot of things that I have that are deficient at, and I think it's the other way around as well.
So how did you kind of come to this hotel project? I mean, what was the appeal? How did they find you, and what was sort of the, what was the draw?
Yeah. So, I don't know if I ever told this story, but the person who told me about it was Aaron Bluedorn. So Aaron and the Jacobies, Dave Jacoby and, Robert Marcus, are the two other two owners, and managing partners in the hotel. They, you know, weren't sure whether or not they wanted to do a food and beverage, and do bring someone in from the outside. Maybe they could handle it themselves. And they were just like, okay, we're just going to like talk to a couple people, see, they, you know, stick our noses out there, see what's going on. And, apparently they chatted with Aaron. Aaron was just in the middle of opening up Bluedorn. And the footprint of the hotel itself is very small. And with that footprint, the footprint of the kitchen itself is very small. And, I believe Dave asked him, like, hey, you know, anybody who can like work into these types of things, maybe in a smaller space. And I am notorious for finding the smallest space possible for high volumes of food or high quality of food. And Aaron had come to BLT, and we chatted with him lightly, and we eaten at T-Rex. And so he suggested us, and we just, a rule of thumb for our company is just to, you know, to always take those meetings. I had no intention of really trying to undertake a hotel in Galveston, but we had chatted with other people about possibly doing food and beverage work for hotels. And for me, we always just like to take those possibilities and see what they turn themselves into. The thing that I am super excited about is, like, these are very hands-on people. They're a lot like Bobby and I. You'll always see us on site. You constantly see Bobby and I, you know, at either one of the restaurants or one of the bars. People that we are looking to work with in the future, I always wanted people who, you know, put their own kind of like grime in the game. You know, you're really looking for people who will work just as hard as you will, who had kind of a passion for Galveston. And I think that's what they conveyed to us. And I think that's what we wanted to do. I think that we got really excited about that, kind of talked through what we wanted to do, what we saw, and the possibilities in Galveston. And I personally have just like a lot of really fond memories about going to Galveston as a kid. We would go, you know, do things, like sometimes we'd go to like, we'd do gardens, we'd go to the beach, we'd do a lot of different things, but never stayed there very long. And you know, I have in my heart, like I just have a soft spot for hotels, especially small ones. And so I just like the ideas just started flowing from my brain. And you know, we met in the middle as far as like what we're looking for, what our next step was for the company. And Bobby was, as I'm sure you know, is like an avid fisherman. He likes the idea of being down there. And I wanted to kind of explore that more too. And I think we've done a lot of work with going to Katie Seafood, learning more about Gulf Fish. And I'm just very super, super passionate and really excited about this project.
Yeah. You know, like you, I think I have kind of childhood memories of going to Galveston, but always as a day trip, you know, right, a couple hours on the beach, you know, maybe lunch at Guido's or someplace like that. And then back home, you know, never really spending the night. And then, you know, as an adult, you know, I've stayed at the Tremont a couple of times. I kind of like that vibe, but you know, I don't think of Galveston really as a city of like destination restaurants necessarily. I mean, I've got a soft spot for Rudy and Paca's, but I'm not sure I would, it's kind of retro, you know, it's like, I think they're still doing the same food they were doing in 1992.
Yeah. I mean, it's a beautifully gritty town. It is beautiful there. There's a lot of personality there. And so that's why I always want to think about it in terms of like, we don't want to like go in and try to, like, it's not like we're going in as like, like, we're going to make this town better. Like, we just want to contribute to like an already really fantastic town. And so what I would say with that is that, you know, there are little things that it's just like, honestly, it's a lot like Houston way. You spend a little bit more time there and you see all like the really fantastic things, like going to like at the end of the night and hanging out at Jack's, going to Lafitte, which again, that the town has really great dive bars. Obviously DTO is like kind of a destination for people going down to Galveston. There's a new restaurant called La Pesca that I'm dying to try out. There is Chef Daya does Fish Company Taco, which is looks like a little shanty shack, but has some of the most beautiful food that I've seen. We went to Miller's last week, which is like just kind of like a seawall, kind of just very classic institution for fried seafood. And obviously there's like Benno's and Guido's and things like that, but there's just a lot to do down there. And there's a lot that if you just peel back the layers just a little bit, you know, on the outside, it looks like a little, you know, rough and tumble shanty town. But if you go in there a little bit, there is just so many really fantastic things down at Galveston. I can't wait to be a part of that and then also learn more about it, but then also show people the little things about Galveston that maybe they hadn't seen before.
Well, and the Galvestonians are very proud of their city, right? Like,
you know, they are, yeah.
There's that whole BOI culture that is very skeptical of outsiders.
Well, we are very fortunate. So my favorite person on the project, Dave's wife, Keith, she is BOI, and she has been really, really big in kind of teaching us more about Galveston. They are very involved in the community over there, so that's a major reason, part of the reason why we're so excited about this project, besides being able to open up restaurants here. So
talk a little bit about the restaurant. I mean, you've sort of been explicit. It's not a seafood restaurant, but it will serve some seafood, and it looks like you were going to have a little bit of fun with your interest in Houston/Hillstone.
It's never going to be Hillstone, just so you know. It's always Houston's. No one can ever tell me otherwise. It'll always be Houston's.
I don't know anyone. I don't know anyone who calls it Hillstone. Like, they could call, like, the company could call it whatever it wants. Just like, I don't know. Like, the, you know, when they changed the Summit to the Compact Center, it's like, I'm still going to call it the Summit.
Well, yeah. I mean,
and now it's like,
I think trying to find something that kind of hit both that born on island culture, but then also was something that I was interested in cooking has been a really fun kind of progress for us. We kind of settled on making sure that it was something that was both very comforting and inclusive, while still kind of just being able to kind of push the boundaries like that we kind of like to do. So, you know, kind of framing things in a framework that is very exciting to us, but then also doesn't, like, you know, disallow your, you know, 60-year-old grandpa or 80-year-old grandpa from coming in and enjoying themselves. And I think that's been a very different thing for myself, at least over the last 5 years, because, you know, I've been undertaking projects like Better Luck Tomorrow, and that has been super, super rewarding for me. Trying to find ways to make sure that the food is more inclusive and that is something that people can relate to, like being able to tell, you know, like the things I love mostly about food is like giving them an idea of what something might be, but just not presenting it in a way that they might not have thought of before. So a singular dish could mean a lot of different things that revert back to childhood memories for a lot of different people. We do a lot of that over at the ORX. So the restaurant itself is kind of like a fine-ish dining. I mean, use the ish because it's kind of funny like that. And as you all know, I'm fucking hilarious. Is a place that you get to be very comfortable, just eat, you know, some very delicious food. I'm never going to be able to compete with the seafood restaurants in Galveston. I've not been born and raised cooking like that. So I'm just going to do what I do best, which is kind of a little bit more French. It's a little Frenchy. The way I love describing it is like kind of like that your quirky aunt who never gets married. She throws dinner parties all the time. They're using the nice dining room. She is she always throws that little spin in there. That's what we're going to cook. I think we're going to cook things that relate to a lot to people, but always just throw our little spin in there. And a lot of that's going to have to relate to hopefully a lot of underutilized fish species in the Gulf, kind of still trying to push the bycatch that we have been using for years and years, and still kind of grow off of that. But you know, it's like, it's something that you want to dress up for a little bit. I think there'll be a few dishes on there that will be comforting, a few dishes that will push you outside your comfort zone. There'll be a raw bar, but no oysters on the half shell. So a couple fun crudos, maybe some really beautiful salads. And, you know, being able to talk to the farmers down there has been very different and eye-opening for me. So, you know, we're always going to focus on quality and execution first. And just like having fun with it, it's going to be a kind of like a loud, rambunctious place. And I think people are really going to enjoy it.
You mentioned you've been talking to some of the farmers. Like, what are you learning? Are there coastal ingredients that you don't typically use at Theodore Rex, for example, that you're looking forward to working with?
I mean, it's Texas is just like kind of one big growing season. So there's not a lot of things like you can get in California, which I always kind of considered, like, people were like, oh, you don't cook these fun things like in California and New York. I'm just like, they kind of had a cheat code, you know. You put a fig on a plate and it's absolutely delicious. We kind of have to work really hard for something like that. Yeah, there's coastal ingredients, but you know, it's still kind of, I wouldn't say run of the mill, but it's definitely like, we've been talking to Casey from Moondog Farms, who actually runs the farmer's market down there. And her husband does a lot of the farming on Moondog. But you know, being able to use some things from them, lettuces, you know, tomatoes when they're in season, beets, just things that they're already good at. But it's fun because like every farm has like that little ism about them, right? And I learned that honestly cooking in California, that every little different space has that little ism about. It's more so at that point, then it's just like trying to find the thing that you want to present that maybe people wouldn't have thought about in the past. And kind of present it in a way that that is both creative, so it's satisfying for yourself, but then also delicious to them. So like one thing that I always kind of go back to, and something that will probably end up on the menu in some sort of way, is using blackfin tuna, which is you can catch in the Gulf, but then also serving it with like braised oxtail. And that is a Ryan Pera dish. And I am totally going to take it and tell Ryan, sorry, buddy. and sorry, chef, not buddy. Sorry, chef. And be able to, because I just always thought it was just so clever, right? You've got something that is comforting, but also just is just slightly different, from you. And those are the things I've learned in the past. And I think that we look a lot into the histories of food and the history of food, being able to kind of like spin that in a way where it always reminds you that you're still in Galveston when you're eating.
All right, let me shift topics on you just a little bit. You know, we just had the Beard Awards kind of return after a couple year hiatus. You're a Beard Award winner. What do you kind of make of the current state of the awards? I mean, I feel like there's always a certain amount of grousing. You know, I think there's a lot of excitement that Alba won for Julep, but also a little bit of like, it would have been nice to see Houston win Best Chef Texas or Hugo's win Outstanding Hospitality. How do you kind of feel about the awards in general and kind of Houston getting properly recognized?
I mean, I think Houston itself constantly gets properly recognized. I think that you can tell by, you know, the amount of people that come from out of town to eat here. How do I feel about the Beard Awards? I am super grateful that we, as a team, won Best Chef 4 or 5 years ago now. Over 5 years ago now. But I guess I'm just not sure. I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's still a really important award. I still think that, you know, people hopefully cook with a lot of, you know, enthusiasm to maybe kind of aim for those types of things, to really push themselves to be recognized for the work that they do. But, you know, I would say maybe it's like a little less, and this is coming from a guy who I guess won it. So it's like, of course I could say it now, but it's like, maybe it's a little less important. I think it's important to build that community. And I think that community building has been really fantastic. And by the way, congratulations to Elva. I mean, she's done a lot of work, a lot of work, and very happy to see someone from Houston win the first national award, especially somebody who works as hard as Elva does. And just to be able to see that we are constantly growing and we're constantly seeing the stories being told. And I'm happy about is that it just really allows for people to have a platform to stand on. And I'm really, really excited in where the state of Houston's food is. It's weird that I'm the old guy now at 37, but there are people like that I am so, so jazzed for. Like the Neo guy is opening up or having their space, Emmanuel from Tetsemo, Christina Al being able to like do exactly what she wants to do with her food. And then there's just like also too, like you always look behind you and you're always looking for people like who are you going to be your next competitors. It allows for these people to open here, you know? So it's like, you know, I'm currently looking at like, I don't know, like Burrito, who is a sous chef over at Nancy's, like he makes delicious bagels. He's going to like be a big part of the Houston food scene in the future. Same thing with, you know, like a guy like Jubin, who used to work at Anvil and at Toasted Coconut. Like I'm excited for him one day to maybe open up a bar. You know, the people who are sous chefs in the city, I think the next 2 or 3 years are going to be the most exciting years in Houston. And it's interesting because there are people coming from the outside that see the same kind of progress and see all these diners and are doing very well.
Yeah, it's got to be gratifying to you to a certain extent to see, you know, whether it's Chef G at Street to Kitchen or Will at Fang at Burger Chan. I mean, people that have worked for you kind of thriving with their own concepts.
That's, again, like part of that is just my favorite part about cooking. G, I love so much, and Will and Diane. It's that next step is just like, you know, if I'm done cooking in my own kitchen for myself, for the guests, the next step for me is like to being able to be a good mentor, to set a good example, and again, just to leave the industry in a better place than I first found it. You know, we're hoping that, you know, again, we're just hoping for an industry that doesn't like chew people up and spit them out, and really just helps bring together a community.
You know, I sort of made this observation to a mutual friend of ours recently. I mean, I don't think we talk enough about like how like sort of improbable it was that you won a Beard Award, you know, never having employed a national, you know, any sort of PR person, you know, not having done like a bunch of reality TV or you know, all the different things that people do to kind of put themselves out there. And it's just, you made really great food. You got some media attention and you kind of got in with some like kind of the right chef circles and it all just kind of came together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think out of everybody that opened in 12, I'm definitely the least probable out of all of them. I don't know really about it. I'm really, really grateful that the city of Houston took so well to us. And it was, you know, really, like we were not able to, people would ask me for reservations. Like I can't explain to you how or why we were booked for nearly 5 years straight. And I just feel eternally lucky that happened. But I think that kind of just shows you, like, if you just really put your mind to it, which we did, and we do every single day, it's like you put to keep on working and you try to do what you do with everybody that you work with as well. And maybe these things will work out for you. Sometimes it's a roll of dice, sometimes, but all, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into it. So.
All right. Well, I'm going to say that seems like a pretty good place to wrap this up. unless you want to do 2 minutes of fantasy football talk. I don't know. Do I have to tell people that we played in a fantasy football league together for like the better part of 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy too. It's like, I look forward to it every single year. There's a good amount of shit talking. I'm sad that I've only won, I think, 3 times.
So. Yeah. I mean, I won a couple of years ago and then was absolutely terrible last year. Like could not have gone worse. So,
yeah, you know, I had Derrick Henry last regroup. Year.
Yeah.
Which was great the first like 6 or 8 weeks and then terrible after that. I couldn't keep the running back save my life. So,
but yes, it's that league essentially exists for a small group of my friends and also my brothers-in-law to talk shit to each other for 4 months a year. And it accomplishes that goal very, very well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, before I let you go, we have to play the lightning round. 5 easy questions, 5 short answers. Just say the first thing that comes to mind. Justin, you, what is your favorite ingredient?
Favorite ingredient. Oh, man. Favorite ingredient. Probably currently shira shoyu. But again, that's kind of like a cheat code. It's like the white soy. It's like a really great way to introduce umami to a lot of different things. I use it a lot of different ways right now.
What is the first band you ever saw in concert?
Ooh, that's a good one. The Bee Gees. My dad pulled me out of middle school. You know, we flew to Las Vegas and we saw the Bee Gees. I'm a huge Bee Gees fan.
Who is your favorite Houston sports figure, past or present?
I would say Robert Horry. Big Shot Bob.
Nice. All right. What is your fast food guilty pleasure? It has to come from a restaurant with a drive-thru.
I don't go as much anymore. I used to go to Whataburger a lot. And so that would be a potato, egg, and cheese taquito with grilled jalapenos. Also a number one. And then I also get a sausage Bob. And so that's a big night for me. So when it does happen.
All right. What is the recently opened Houston restaurant that you're dying to try but haven't had a chance to yet?
I have not gone to the dinner at Tatemo that I had it booked one time and I wasn't able to go because I had to work, which sucked because I was like, hey, I finally have a little bit of free time. I can go out to dinner these days on a Saturday. And I had to work that night, but I haven't been to. But Emmanuel, I'm coming for you, buddy.
Well, I know that he listens to this podcast, so he'll be thrilled. Justin, give us the social media for anything you want to plug.
Sure.
Squabble, yeah. BLT, T-Rex, whatever.
Got it. My personal one is Tetsu Justin. You'll know by the little rat Gus at Avatar from Cinderella. We have Squabble Houston, or sorry, Squabble Time, at Squabble Time. We have Better Luck Tomorrow, H-O-U. For Better Luck Tomorrow, we have T-Rex Houston. And I might as well just put Anvil Houston and Refuge Cocktails also.
Very good. Well, thanks for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
All right. You can follow me on Instagram at Eric Sandler. Keep it locked on culturemap.com for all the latest Houston bar and restaurant news. This is your periodic reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. I welcome your comments and your ratings. But like Katie Nolan says, only if it's 5 stars and only if it's nice. Thanks so much for listening. I'll be back next week.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.